Welcome back to another episode of Life Lessons Unscripted. Today, I'm speaking with Beck Millman. Beck Millman was scouted at only 12 years old and launched into what became a dynamic and successful modeling career. Encouraged by narrative photographer Angela Strassheim, she pursued modeling and has since worked across the globe, including South Korea, Australia, Chile, Paris, Milan, and throughout the United States. Her work has been featured in numerous high-profile publications, including Japanese Vogue, Elle Bulgaria, Cosmopolitan Mexico, InStyle Magazine Australia, Diva e Donna Italia, Desnudo Italia, Cake, Hamptons, Cutblut, Solstice, and Revista Paola. She has also walked for major fashion brands such as Dolce & Gabbana, Rachel Zoe, Ralph & Russo, Celia Cuthrani, Ziad Nakad, and Marquesa, as well as shot for a wide range of clients such as Prada, Missoni, RMS Beauty, Guess, Forever 21, Target, Kohl's, and more. Beyond print and runway, she has appeared on television, with featured roles in American Crime Story, The Assassination of Gianni Versace, and The Bold and Beautiful CBS. Now, while continuing her modeling career, she has returned to school, pursuing a psychology major with a minor in environmental science, bringing a new dimension to her journey. Here is Beck Millman.
Hello.
Hi. It's wonderful to see you.
It's so lovely to be here. I'm excited to do my first podcast. So,
yay! I'm excited to get on with this journey of yours. It seems you've had an excellent modeling career. Your photos are fantastic. And you know what's interesting about your bio that I just mentioned? Gianni Versace was, okay, there's the guy who actually assassinated Gianni Versace, went to my school.
Really? Which school do you go to?
The Bishop School.
No way.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. It's kind of like a hush-hush there, so if someone finds
it. It's not really something you want to brag about.
I just realized it as I was reading that, and I was like, oh.
That's wild. I did not know that. So that's a super fun Gianni Versace fact.
Yeah. He was excellent, though. I loved his work.
I'm sure it's not representative of all Bishop School kids.
No, we're not killers. We're not assassins.
I think you have to kill 3 people to be a serial killer. So
really?
I don't know how many you killed, but
yeah, I think he killed like 2 people, 1 person. I don't know.
Okay. This is going to turn into a true crime podcast really fast.
Yeah. So you were scouted when you were 12. So how did you, I don't know, how was that? Like, how did you really get into modeling at 12 years old?
So I actually started getting scouted around 11. It was a big surprise to me. It was not something I was expecting at all. I grew up in a very academic household. My dad was a doctor. My mom was a speech pathologist. Definitely more on like the scientific, you know, medical mappy side of things. But I was always like the little black sheep. I was always the artsy kid. And so I was actually going to a fine arts school at the time. So I was already really passionate about the visual arts and photography. And I think the first time I got scouted, I was at the Mall of America in Minnesota, which is a classic place to get scouted. and the thing was at 11 years old, I was already 5'9". So I was really tall really fast. And for reference, I'm 5'11 now. So I actually haven't grown a ton since then. But you know, I had just sprouted up. I was like really tall, skinny. I was in Minnesota. I was super pale. I had this long blonde hair to my butt. So I got scouted a couple times, but I thought they were all scams. I just assumed as much. And then it wasn't until I met Angela Strassheim, who she actually approached me when I was out at lunch with my mom, and she explained that she was doing this portrait series for one of the exhibitions she was going to do, kind of trying to capture innocence. So it was very much not a fashion photo shoot. It was more artistically driven. And we looked her up. She was super cool. She had a really interesting artistic style. And so like the art nerd in me, I was like, oh my gosh, of course I'll do this. And it was awesome. I think I did in total, like maybe 3 shoots with her. And, I just fell in love with the art, the process, how much you can convey in a photo. You know, I also was a musical theater kid. So it's acting, you know, you get to put on costumes and you're acting and trying to convey all this emotion through a still photo, which is an extra challenge. So yeah, she was the one that was like, hey, you know, you should maybe consider like actually looking into this. And, I was visiting family in San Diego and we came out, I met with a couple agencies and I was signed. And then that was like, that was the end of the story, or I guess the beginning of the story. Yeah.
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 Well, that's so cool. Tell me more about like the process about like, you know, I don't really know what a typical time on the set really looks like. How does that look like for you?
So for, I'm assuming you're referring to a fashion photo shoot.
Oh, yeah.
That's why we're here. So yeah, so you show up on time, or actually ideally like a little early because you don't want to be stressed and showing up like panicked. And so you generally are going to start off in hair and makeup. That can take, depending on the look, anywhere from an hour. That's pretty rare. It's generally a couple of hours that you spend in the makeup and hair chair, which is fun because those tend to be the people that you spend the most time with on set, and they're all amazing. I love all my hair and makeup friends. They're so talented and really awesome. And then, yeah, then you go into styling. Sometimes before you do hair and makeup, they'll have you fit some of the clothes or figure out if there's any looks that they're not sure about. They'll have you try them on, see if they want to style them differently, or see if maybe they need different sizes of things. And then, yeah, you go into styling. Generally, you'll do like a hair makeup test photo with the lighting set up, see if they need to tweak anything. And then it's just, and you just go.
That's great. Do you recall, I know you mentioned that you did some photo shoots with Angela Strassheim. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what that felt like? Like how you really like got it? What did you feel as you stepped into this like new chapter of your life? And like, what did you learn?
So I think that working with her was a really gentle transition from just being a normal kid that is, like most normal kids, kind of uncomfortable around cameras to being quite comfortable. She did such a good job of putting me completely at ease. She was a young, you know, a young woman as well. And she had just one assistant with her, so it wasn't a big crew. And she was shooting me in my environment. So it was, I wasn't in a foreign environment. I wasn't in a scary studio or anything. It was like, I think the first portrait we did was actually me in my bedroom. And so, you know, I'm like a kid and I'm showing this cool older girl my bedroom. And she was explaining how everything worked, explaining the camera, the lights to me. And so from like an art nerd perspective, I was just really intrigued and excited, and yeah, I was really enthralled by the whole process. So it definitely, it wasn't that abrupt of a transition. I think that probably my first editorial shoot, which was actually pretty soon after starting modeling, that was with Chicago Scene magazine, shot by David Anthony, and that was, yeah, that was, I think, actually my first job in general, which was,
wow.
You know, it was a very high fashion shoot. I still have the magazines and it's crazy to look through them and be like, I was a baby and I was stepping onto this very high fashion, very professional set. And I don't know whether the crew knew how young I was. I think they might have thought I was a little bit older, maybe like 15, 16. But yeah, it was a totally new environment. Everyone was really nice. And I just kind of fell in love with the drama of it all. You know, that shoot starting with editorial, I had very dramatic makeup, very dramatic hair, dramatic costuming. We were shooting in this really beautiful bistro. It was very dark and moody. And I was like, this is incredible. Like, it was acting and art and all of these things that I loved just combined into one thing. And I got to play the role of this character that was not me. It was not Beck on camera. It was whoever that girl was. So it was, I was hooked.
Wow. That's interesting that you mentioned like you kind of have this like alter ego person that you become when you get
Yeah.
in front of the camera.
Yeah.
If you had to give her a name, what would you give her? And like, what would you describe as her personality?
I mean, she's so many different people, you know, like it depends on the brand. I think that that's probably one of the things that I love the most about, you know, working with all these different brands is, I'm really not a fashion person myself. I generally, when I'm in my own environment, I'm dressing for comfort. I'm, you know, I see the potential of clothes that they can be these costumes that you put on and they can give you power or, you know, make you ethereal or whatever. But, I think that for me, I like to think of myself as kind of a blank slate. And then I try to research the brands before I work for them and get an idea of what like the soul of the company is. What's the vibe that they're going for? What's the look that they like? What's the emotion that they like? And then I try to bring that to life with my work. So yeah, each job is different. The girl I'm, you know, doing for a very LA chill, hippie, beachy job is going to be very different than the girl that I'm doing for like a high fashion editorial in Milan.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, so in some ways, like that modeling process kind of teaches you to mold and kind of become different people, just like acting kind of does.
Oh, 100%. I think that all of the best models are also like phenomenal actresses. And I aspire to be in that category, but I know that I'm, you know, not there yet, but it is acting. And if anything, you don't have dialogue to help you. You don't have the moving. You don't have, you know, seconds, minutes, hours on screen. You have just one photo and you have to capture so much in that one photo. So, and that's not just all the model. Of course, there's a lot that the makeup artist has to bring, the hairstylist, the clothing stylist, the set designer, the photographer, the lighting team, all any other people that I'm forgetting, but everybody has to pull their own weight and make sure that that is able to be, that message is able to come through in the photo that you create.
Yeah, that's, listen, I've tried it like maybe like once or twice, maybe three times.
Yeah.
Hard, so hard. Because my first one was when I was like 14 and I was going for Claire's. And it was this like,
oh yeah,
it was this big thing. I worked with like these awesome people. But when I got in front of the camera for the first time, and they ended up having me back. So I got like a redo for like the second. Oh. But like, I remember they were like, okay, less stiff, like relax a little bit more. And I was like,
yeah,
I don't know what I was doing. I was so stiff and I it was so unnatural. How did, yeah. I don't know. I know you said that you had a soft transition into your career with Angela Strassheim, but how did you learn to get like so comfortable with the camera eventually?
I think there's a couple of things, but I think one of the big things is how, you know, I was just talking about, I'm playing characters. There's something that almost offers a layer of protection. It's not Beck on camera, you know, it's whoever she's playing. And so I feel like it allows me to have confidence and act in a way that maybe I wouldn't if it was me on camera. And it's funny because, you know, my friends, my family will tell you that when it's me and I'm just hanging out with friends and they try to take pictures of me, I get really awkward, which is completely like, it doesn't make any sense because it's what I do for a living. But in that setting, they're taking photos of me and all of a sudden I get a little bit stiff, a little bit uncomfortable. But when I'm on set, I'm not playing myself. I'm in costume. I'm in hair and makeup and I'm playing a completely different person. So it's really not like, you know, my ego on the line. It's that character. And then also I think that in terms of movement and, understanding lighting, understanding how to be comfortable on set, I think a lot of it came from and was influenced by the fact that I was in an art school at the time. And I was, my focus was visual arts. So I was taking a lot of classes on, you know, artistic theory and form and function and lighting. And so I don't know if everybody does this, but when I'm on set, I have like a visual projection in my mind of what I look like on the set. So I'm feeling the light hitting me maybe, you know, here, and I'm aware of where the photographer is sitting. So I'm doing these kind of calculations, and in my mind, I'm constructing this image of what I think I look like. And that allows me to move in a way that is going to be flattering and is going to work for the scene, for the clothes. You know, you have to be focused on a lot of things. Not only are you trying to make sure that you look okay, but you're also there generally to sell clothing. So you have to be constantly aware of, okay, I have my pants legs ridden up, or is my shirt wrinkled, or, you know, maybe I look really great when I'm super crunched up, but then people can't see the shirt. So you have to find a way to still display the clothes and sell this character while also making sure that everything looks great. So there's a lot of things, you know, going on at once, but it makes sense to me.
Yeah, that's great. That's so introspective too. You have to like get in tune with your character, and then you have to like pay attention to like, I never thought about the light hitting the face. That's just, it's so artistic. Obviously it's art.
I think that's like, isn't that like a America's Next Top Model thing? Like find your light, you know?
I've never watched that show, but find your light, guys. Fine.
I mean, that also I would say, you know, I didn't watch that religiously, but once I started modeling, I did watch a bit of that. And of course it's pretty extreme, and it's not a really super accurate representation of the modeling industry as a whole, but oh my gosh, I loved the, like, all of their photo shoots are insane, and they're so artistic, and the costumes are wild, and the movements are wild, and they're, you know, jumping off of buildings with crazy rigs. Like, I could only dream of doing that kind of shoot. But I think as a kid, I was like so inspired by the art of it all and the performance of it all. So that was also a really fun kind of learning.
Yeah.
Education television program.
that's cool. I think you're so right about like the TV, like when like some inaccurate representations of certain industries. There's a certain thing about modeling that I know that I've been told as like a child or a teenager listening in on the media, and it has to do with like, you know, there's a lot of stuff about Victoria's Secret and like the runway, the culture, and like the early 2000s. And I know that you were probably like a kid in the earlier 2000s, growing up and like hearing all this stuff. This is going to be a tough question actually for me to phrase, but in terms of like modeling having so much to do with a person's image, how did you, you don't have to answer this question if you don't feel like it, but did you struggle with any kind of, I don't know, insecurity surrounding body image? And
of course, and I'll try to fumble my way through this answer as eloquently as possible. But of course, you know, I tell people my job is a bit different because instead of, while I am selling a product in the form of clothes, I'm also the product that I'm selling. So, you know, other people, you know, you can have a bad day, you can be sick, you can have like a dumb haircut or something, and you can still go to work and you can still, you know, be successful. But with modeling, even if you're having a bad day, like your look, like how you're presenting yourself is key to doing your job. So that's a ton of pressure. You know, you have a bad breakout, you didn't get enough sleep, so you have bags under your eyes. You tried a new shampoo, so your hair's freaking out. I broke my leg this last year and I was out of work for 5 months because like, it's really hard to walk in heels if you can't walk. So yes, of course, your body is under an extreme microscope, and you become painfully aware of any imperfections. Like, I know which foot is slightly bigger. I know which leg is slightly longer. I know which side of my rib cage sticks out slightly more, because you've got A, people telling you that, and B, like, there's just so much of you is being examined on a daily basis it's hard to not know that. And women in general and men, of course, there's like huge issues with just body dysmorphia and aging and going through puberty and feeling a little bit foreign in your own skin. But I would say it's just magnified when you're also in the fashion industry doing that. And so for me, you know, I started modeling at 12. I hadn't hit puberty yet. I would say I started hitting puberty around 14. So that was challenging because I was going through my awkward stage in the industry while I was actively working. And when I first started, it was still kind of the tail end of the slightly more size obsessed era that, you know, happened in the 80s, the 90s with the really, you know, heroin chic, really thin, gaunt models. They weren't looking very healthy. That was the look. And early 2000s, it was also, there was a huge push to be on, you know, profoundly skinny. So I was still on the tail end of that when I was starting. It used to be that anytime I went into the agency, they would get their measuring tape out and they would measure they would do all your measurements. And my skeleton was changing. You know, my hips were fit, like my bones were growing. And additionally, I was putting on a bit of weight. I was, you know, my baby fat was shifting around. So that was really challenging. And that, I think, pretty dramatically impacted my body image. And I really struggled with it at that time because, you know, I had agents telling me, oh, you know, your hip measurements are getting bigger. You know, maybe you need to do something about that. What are you doing for exercise? What are you eating? And I was being made to feel like my measurements changing were affecting my worth, or that my hip measurements growing were somehow representative of my value as a person or my willpower, when it was just me growing up. And now, you know, I've been in this long enough that I have much better relationship with the industry, and also the industry has shifted a lot. So now they're trying to celebrate more healthy bodies and be more inclusive and show different body types and have a little bit more realistic representation of what beauty is, and what health looks like. So thank God. I don't know when the last time somebody brought out a tape measure was, but still to this day, if I see a tape measure come out, I like break out in a sweat a little bit because it just was like, it was so rough for so many years. But yeah, it's been challenging and eye opening. It's also different market to market. You know, obviously if you're doing fashion weeks, there's going to be maybe some unspoken pressure to be on the thinner side. And then there's other markets where, you know, they won't want you if you're too thin. So you kind of have to change your look based on the market, which is also, or you just hope that the market will like you as you are, which I feel like I generally sit more on that side of things. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, that's really tough. And I know you're also majoring now in psychology and, you know, you're in school and you're probably learning a lot about adolescence and the psychology when you're in your adolescent years. I obviously don't know anything about that. I'm just taking a class in my high school.
Yeah.
I know it's a really volatile time. It's hormones. You're changing, you're growing, you're adapting your perception of the world based on your interactions. Like, that must be really tough to grow up and be hearing all that kind of stuff in one time.
Yeah, it was a rough time. It was a challenging time because I also, you know, on top of all that pressure, I was also trying to work and go to school at the same time. I stayed in public school the whole time. So that was incredibly challenging. You know, hindsight 2020, would I have done it the same way? Probably not, but I was stuck because I wanted to take honors and AP classes, and those just weren't available at the time through online or homeschool programs. So I think we did the best with what we had. But yeah, I was drowning in makeup work and I was struggling with like the normal teenage insecurities and, you know, teenage relationships and school and, you know, feeling also a little bit, outcast because I think that, you know, in school, modeling was something that made me interesting, but it also made me maybe less relatable to a lot of kids. So I found it was tricky for me to feel like I really fit in and was like accepted, in school. So yeah, it was a challenging time. I mean, it's challenging for anyone. And I think that that's why I have so much, empathy for people that navigate, like child actors that navigate working through their teenage and their awkward years and then go into, you know, their adult years working. It's hard to be aging like on camera. So yeah.
Yeah. I just want to give you a heads up. There's like 8 minutes left in this meeting. Okay. I will stop us at like the 2 minute mark and then we'll join another meeting. We'll take a chill pill and we'll join another meeting.
Okay.
And continue. But I just want to
okay, perfect. Perfect. Thank you.
Okay,
great.
Yeah, like, I totally get the child actor situation. I know, that's so interesting that you mentioned that how like that relatability seems to be a little bit less because not every single kid at your public school had gone through that experience of modeling for high fashion stuff. And it's so cool. But I also, to some extent, relate a little bit because like obviously now I'm in high school and I go to like a really tough academic school and it's been hard to continue acting just because I just don't have time to take on like the tough big projects. And it's also become a thing of like many people can't relate to it. And it's, I don't know, I know there's a lot of other child actors and models that are in schools. What would your advice to them be? It's a tough one.
It's a tough one because I think fundamentally there's just going to be a large percentage of the population that are never going to be able to relate to what you do, that are never going to be able to understand. I mean, I dealt with some bullying from fellow students, but honestly, the hardest time I had was with teachers bullying me, teachers that singled me out and were making my life an absolute living hell because they didn't like that I was different. They didn't like that I was you know, missing school and missing their classes for something that they didn't value as a career. So I think I stuck with it because I didn't want to let them win and I wanted to stay in school and I wanted to continue with my extracurriculars and do all of the things and not have to sacrifice anything. But I really think that what I ultimately sacrificed was my mental health. And so if I was talking to a 12-year-old kid that was getting into acting or modeling, I would say that, you know, since COVID, one of the silver linings is there are a ton of online or alternative school, options online now. So, or in person, or you can go to community colleges, which are amazing. There's just so many more resources. So I would say that even if your education looks slightly atypical, it doesn't look like a typical public school or private school or whatever situation. It's okay. What really matters is that you are taking care of yourself. You're happy, you're healthy, and you're learning. And so whether that's learning in a public school or online or whatever that looks like for you, I think that that should be the priority, not sticking with the standard.
Yeah, that's beautiful, actually. Yeah, that's great. So we've gone through the challenges, I'm assuming, of being a child model. What are the hardest things about being a model, like, now?
I mean, right now?
Right now?
I am once again in school and working, so that's challenging. No, I actually feel like this is like funny, but like, you know how like in a relationship or like a good relationship, you have like the honeymoon period where you're super excited and then that kind of melts away and you get to see the nitty-gritties of each other and you're like, oh my gosh, okay, this is getting real. And then once you get through that, you like hit that groove where you're like, you've figured out how to kind of live and let live and have this symbiotic relationship and take the good and leave the bad. I feel like I'm at that, like, 10, 15 year married mark. Where, I mean, it's been 17 years of working. So of course there's still, things that I don't love, but, for the most part, I think I have a much healthier relationship with it. I always say like, so long as it can fit into my life and I can still be healthy and I can still be happy, I'll continue doing it. Like, it's great. It brings me joy. I get to hang out with really cool people and travel, and make money. But, the second that it's taking a more away from me than it's giving me, I can walk away. I've had a great career. I know that I've been incredibly lucky and, I don't want to walk away, but if I have to, I would. So it doesn't have power over me. And my mom used to always say something that I thought was brilliant back then, but it took me a while to like really understand it. She used to always say, like, modeling is what you do, it's not who you are. Which is incredibly wise for somebody that has never worked in the industry. But I think she saw how it can become, such a cornerstone of a person's identity and how dangerous that can be because it is a somewhat fickle relationship, in that, something can happen, like you breaking your leg or you getting in an accident and you can lose it overnight. It's not going to be loyal to you just because you've been in it for years. And the industry changes, the desires of the industry change. So you have to have that healthy relationship with it. And I think you also have to have, enough else going on in your life that if you lose that one element, you're not left with nothing. I think that if it's your core identity and that's everything you are, if you were to lose that, it's going to be way more devastating. And also when you let the what you do for work have that power over you, it's going to have, it's going to impact your mental health, your body image, all of that so much more. 'Cause it's kind of like an abusive relationship in that way.
Yeah, that's really wise, actually. On that topic, is your mom one of your biggest inspirations growing up? Do you have like any models you looked up to, or like siblings, parents, things, people, not things,
Yeah.
people you look
I
up
mean,
to?
I definitely look up to my mom and my dad and my brother. They're all incredible people and so smart and, very different from me in a lot of ways. Also similar to me in a lot of ways. We do share blood and they've, it took particularly my dad a while to come around with on the modeling thing because for him and in the way he was raised, academics were everything. And, they didn't place much value. His family didn't place much value on what I was doing. I think it was maybe somewhat seen as a waste of time or like just a fun hobby. But since then, I think since I've been doing it so long and they've been able to see that I've had, some great success and I've had a really like a wonderful career, I definitely a lot of the people that were a little on the fence have come around. And now my dad's a huge supporter and my mom has always been my biggest supporter. She was the one that was, she came to South Korea with me 'cause I was 15 when I went there. And she came and visited me in Australia and all around the United States when I was underage. She was the one that was traveling with me and driving me up to Los Angeles for castings and it was insane, but yeah, so she was amazing. And in terms of my, like any model inspirations, I think that because I kind of started in the same era as like Karlie Kloss, she was also, quite young. She started, I think, at 13, maybe. And so I was really inspired by her because not only was she an incredibly talented model, but she was smart, and she wasn't afraid to show that she was smart. You know, she had priorities outside of fashion, and she would also be, you know, I remember hearing that she also was like crocheting backstage or doing homework backstage at shows. And I was like, that's me. Like, I also crochet and do homework. So, that, you know, for a young girl was a really good role model. Cause it seemed like she also had a really healthy relationship with the industry.
That's good. Yeah. I don't know much about Karlie Kloss, but she sounds awesome.
I mean, I don't know as much as I should, but I think she's super smart, and I know she's super active in like the, you know, women in STEM industry. And now I think she started some sort of a organization for teaching girls coding and programming, which, respect, it's not for me, but that's what my brother does. And like, I'm so proud of him, but I don't understand it. I did take a Java class and learned enough to get by, but I don't think I'll be pursuing a career in that anytime soon.
Me neither. I cannot code. I cannot do anything there.
It's very confusing. Yeah.
Yeah. My dad does that. He sits by the computer and it's just like, and I'm like, how do you do that all day? He's like, it's like playing a game. I'm like,
yeah.
Like, whoa.
More power to him.
Yeah. Go yeah. for it, bro. Not me.
Yeah.
So what does a typical day look like for you as a model? Like, give me a quick, like, day in the life of Beck Billman.
Well, I think a thing to note is that modeling is highly, it's very intermittent. So it's not an everyday job. It's not a 9-to-5, you know, 5 days a week. You'll have some weeks where you're working every single day, or you'll have some weeks where you're not working at all. So that alone can be really challenging, because you have no consistency in your life. So it makes having a schedule, having, relationships, having another job, you know, planning vacations, stuff like that, it makes it really challenging. But yeah, so I guess the day in the life, it really depends on, the season and also where I'm working. Cause if I'm working in Milan, my day is going to be very different because most of the jobs are outside of Milan. So it's generally waking up at 3 a.m. and, you know, getting myself to the train station and then getting on the train and then sleeping on the train and waking up in some, you know, beautiful place in Italy and then, you know, finding my driver, finding a taxi, whatever, getting to work and then working. And then after work, either going back to Milan by train or getting on another train, going to another place and staying in a hotel for a shoot in, you know, another city the next day. In Los Angeles, it's a lot easier because I'm so close. So yeah, you just, you know, I wake up early, just like the rest of us, and eat breakfast. I guess the main difference is that I don't go to work with a full face of makeup and my hair done. You know, you do it there. And yeah, generally I'll try to like eat a higher protein breakfast just to help get me through the day because modeling is a surprisingly physical job. You're, even if you're shooting e-commerce in a studio, putting on and taking off, you know, 100 outfits is exhausting. You know, you're bending over, you're sitting down, you're standing up, you know, it's just nonstop movement. And then for sure for editorials, you know, sometimes you're jumping around, you're doing crazy stuff. And those days I come home and I am like flat out, I can't do anything but lay on the couch. So
yeah, that sounds, obviously you're burning so much energy when you're just like taking on.
Yeah.
What would be your modeling essentials? Like a fun question, like products, clothes. I don't know. Do you have a special like bag that you carry everywhere?
I know that normally you ask these questions to fashion people and they're like, this is my bag, my fully stocked Prada bag that has everything. I am not that organized, but, I generally have a bag with me that has, you know, at least a concealer, either a lip balm or a lip gloss and mascara. generally you always want to have spare like hair ties, because you never know when you're going to be asked to put your hair up. And water. I always have like the largest water bottle with me, and I'm so sad because I left it at my dad's house, so I don't have it right now. So I'm like, my hydration is not as great right now. But yeah, that, and then, you know, in my car, that's kind of my informal shoe closet. I have you know, a nude strappy heel, I have a black strappy heel, I have a black stiletto, I have a nude stiletto, I have, I think, a gold stiletto. I have, you know, my Converse that are like my day-to-day shoe. I have, you know, a Nike Cortez. And generally there's also a pair of like, you know, more like black kind of combat boots. But it's great to just have those so that if you need them, sometimes you're, you know, doing a show and like, God forbid the shoes don't fit. If you have shoes in your car and they don't care that it's not the same brand, you know, that can be really valuable. And sometimes you'll have clients that ask you to bring your shoes. But those are probably the biggest essentials. Also a book. Like, I always have a book with me, because there's a lot of downtime. So I used to crochet a lot, so I always had crocheting in my bag. Now it's more books. Maybe if it's a long day, a phone charger, but that's pretty much it. Makeup remover is great to have.
Oh yeah.
Like, especially, I just generally have one of those little, I can't pronounce it, micellar waters.
Yeah.
And the, you know, little cotton rounds, or, you know, some sort of a face wash, because sometimes you have crazy makeup after a job and your skin just needs a break. So
yeah, I saw that picture on your Instagram with like, you had like blue like outside of your face. I was like, that probably took like 4 hours to get off, probably more.
That was funny, and that was what, with like, oh my gosh, I loved working with that photo team. That was down in Chile, and it was funny because we were shooting in like probably one of the biggest most popular parks in Santiago. So there were a lot of people that were walking around like, why is this girl painted blue? Also in Chile, which was way worse than the blue one, was I did this campaign for, oh my gosh, I'm blanking. I'm so bad with remembering the names of clients. I can't remember. I'm so sorry, but it was a makeup campaign and we were shooting a commercial, and they did these like circles all over my face. It was like a very, like, they were showing the, you know, the art that you could do with their products. And, it was so cool. And I was flying to Milan the next day, I believe. So I was going straight to the airport, and I went to take my makeup off, and the circles like stained my skin. So I had these like red, yellow, blue circles and like black circles like all over my face. And it just, there was nothing I could do. I was like, okay, I look crazy, but I gotta go.
That's funny. Do you have any, what's the craziest modeling story from your long career that you have? If you have one.
Craziest modeling story. I have so many jobs where I just have to pinch myself and be like, oh my gosh, like, this is what I do for work. This is my job. Like, how lucky am I? Or also like, how crazy is this? It's a lot of that. A lot of the, how crazy is this? I think that probably one of my most unique jobs in the recent years, and one of my most fun jobs, I wouldn't say it was crazy by a long shot, but I was actually working with one of my favorite photographers / besties in Milan, or in Italy, Carlo Williams Rossi. And we were shooting a campaign for a company down in, it was kind of just out of Naples, heading down, looking at Mount Vesuvius on the coast. So it was kind of Amalfi vibes. And it was, we weren't shooting clothes. We were shooting bedding for, you know, like sheets and pillows. And I was just kind of, as a model, I was kind of just the accessory for like the main, the main situation. So all day long, I was in like silky nightgowns and hanging out with like my best friends. And we were in this insane villa on the cliffs, overlooking Mount Vesuvius, overlooking the, you know, the tide pools, like crystal clear water. And, you know, we break for lunch. We're having focaccia and wine and espresso. And it was like the ultimate Italian experience. And the like, you know, real pièce de résistance shot was they actually built a bed out on the tide pools, like in on the reef. Not coral, but you know, whatever. So it looked like it was floating in the water. And I just went out and I was like laying in it, and they were doing these drone shots of me in this bed in the water, which was so cool. And I had a job the next day somewhere in northern Italy. So I had to get the train back, and the last train of the day left at like 6 or 6:30 or something. And we were running late, and it was rush hour. So the production team came to me and they were like, "We're so sorry to do this to you, but if you need to make that train tonight, we can't drive you because you're not going to make it there in time. So we're going to have to send you with the art director on the back of his Vespa." And I was like, okay. And so, you know, I got my helmet on, and it was like, you know, from my era, the Lizzie McGuire movie in Rome, where she's like on the back of the Italian scooter and they're zipping through the towns. I mean, it was breathtakingly beautiful, like such a pinch me moment. I'm just on the back of this scooter. We're zipping through cars. We're cutting along the coast on the ridgeline. There's just like water on both sides. It was incredible. And I caught my train. So that was probably one of my most fun, like just memorable job experiences. It wasn't particularly crazy. It was just awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's great. Okay. I usually like to end each podcast episode with something fun, like a little game. Okay. So we're going to play Smash or Pass Fashion Edition. We're not going to use real people, obviously.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you trends, fashion trends, I think, or items from varying eras of fashion. And you're going to say smash if, you know, you'd bring it back or you like it or you want it to continue. Or you're going to say pass if you wouldn't. And
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So start. Hippie style. Tie-dye.
Oh, smash. I have a tie-dye shirt just in a box over there. Love yeah. Tie-dye.
I would skip, but I think you would look... Smashing.
I definitely have like a strong hippie vibe deep in my core, so.
Sequins. Like fabrics with sequins on them. It's like sequin dresses, sequin skirts, sequin tops.
I did a show the other day that there was like a full length gown that was like very loose fitting. I don't know. I didn't figure out what the brand was. I thought it might have been Cucinelli, and Cucinelli is probably one of the only brands that I have worked with that knows how to do a classy sequin. That being said, like their sequins, smash.
Love.
Pretty much every other sequin in the world, hard pass.
Yeah, I loved sequins when I was a kid. It was, have you seen those like Justice had those like pictures of things that had sequins on them, and you would like
yeah.
You would rub them up, rub them down, and they would say different things.
Yeah, we had a pillow in my apartment that was Jeff Goldblum on one side, and like, I don't know what was on the other side, but it was always on the Jeff Goldblum side.
Jorts.
Are we talking like Daisy Dukes?
Yeah, sure.
Jean shorts. Yeah, like short. Yeah, then smash. Yeah. That's pretty much what I wear all summer long, so.
Yeah. Also, the, you know, like the Adam Sandler, like long, big. Oh. What about those?
I'm gonna say, do what you want. I've seen a couple that are cute, but in general, pass.
Chokers or crop tops, like chokers and crop tops together.
Crop tops smash. It's great for people like me that have a long torso because you can just cut your shirt off and say that it was intentional. And chokers, they have a time and a place, but I don't like it when they're overdone, so I'm going to say pass.
Okay. Low-rise jeans. This one's a hot topic.
This is a controversial one because, so there's like, I know that the early 2000s are coming back in fashion and people are doing low-rise jeans, but I haven't seen any low-rise jeans in stores that are actually low-rise by my standards, which were early 2000 standards, where you have the, you know, one-inch zipper and it cuts into your hip bones and it's very revealing. So the one-inch zipper, pass, because the muffin top does not need to come back. Not a cute look for anyone, and it doesn't matter who you are, what your body type is, you're gonna get one. We all get muffin tops and it's not cute. If it's a more of a like mid-rise, low rise, I have a couple pairs of jeans that, yeah, like they make your butt look cute and little and into that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. On the topic of 2000s, track suits like Juicy Couture, that's coming back.
I got to work with Juicy Couture for a few years. And so I got to know their brand really well. I mean, I'm a girl. I love comfort. So I would say smash in that respect. I will say velour is tricky, and it gets, if you don't treat it very well, it can get really nasty looking really fast. So I don't know if we've like improved our velour technology, but so tentative smash.
Tentative smash. Love that. Love that. On the topic of jeans, actually earlier, skinny jeans.
Pass. Pass straight to hell. Never come back. I want to burn all my skinny jeans. I still have to own, you know, black skinny jeans because of work, but if I could, I would just light them up. They should not exist.
That's funny. I hate skinny jeans too. I do not know. You know, actually, you know what I've seen? They're coming back. I see them on like my TikTok and people pair them with like riding boots and like, no.
I do that in the wintertime. I do my like black skinny with the riding boots and it makes me feel equestrian. But other than that, no.
Oh, on the topic of that, riding boots. Do we like? Do we not like?
I like them because I like anything that makes me feel horsey because I'm a horse girl at heart. But yeah, smash. I would give the nod to like a cowboy riding boot, but
yeah. What do you think about like sweatpants, like the big sweatpants, like athleisure?
I mean, I'm wearing a pair currently. So I would say they're so comfortable. I do think that COVID killed the fashion industry a little bit, because it really shifted everything to athleisure, which as a lover of comfort, it's great, but it is good to put real pants on every once in a while. So I do think that athleisure should stay in your home or at the gym for the most part. Once again, live your life, do what you want. I'm by no means a fashion guru and I honestly don't care, but I do think that the people that always look like they're heading to the gym and yet they never go to the gym, like, I'm just like, come on, man. Like, jeans are great. Like, find a pair of comfortable jeans or like, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. I don't know where I heard this, but someone was talking about how they were in Japan and like the uniform policies are so strict. You have to wear the tie. You have to wear the blazer, the button-up shirt. And it was shocking to them that kids go to school wearing their sweats and just like, I mean, again, it's comfortable, but they were like, you go to school wearing that pajama situation? We're like, yeah, yeah. And they're like, oh my God.
I think there should be a little bit of a separation. You know, it's kind of like how I really think that it's important to like leave the house. You know, like I think that you should have, there should be a line between your home clothes and your outside clothes. And when you blur those lines, all I can say is, like, for me personally, it's not the best thing for my mental health, self-esteem. I will say, though, the reason I bought these wide leg pants was because when I had a broken leg, I had a boot on for months, and it was, I had to go out and buy a ton of just like wide leg sweatpants because that was all I could wear. So they really saved me. So I'm really grateful that they were in fashion when I did that. But yeah.
That's good. Yeah, I have a uniform at school, so it's nice to have that separation. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about flannel and the grunge?
I love flannel. Hard, hard smash. I think that if I could just move out to the woods and only wear a cotton flannel every day for the rest of my life, I would be really happy. So.
That's good. Okay, this one's going to start moving into hair, because why not?
Yeah, why not?
The butterfly, like, layered, big, voluminous blowout, like Rachel from Friends style hair.
Well, I'm not so up on hair trends, so I'm just going off of the Rachel from Friends thing, and I think I love a layer. I love a messy, tousled look. I think that the Rachel look required a lot more like blowout, heat styled, polished, which is like maybe not my style, because my hair gets enough, you know, heat at work. When I'm not working, I just want it to let it exist. But for the general population, I think, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Very short bob.
I mean, I had one previously, so yeah. If you go to my Instagram or my portfolio, you'll see a lot of the short bob look. Not a pixie cut, but it was a bob. And then there was a little misunderstanding when I was getting my hair cut in Italy, and it got a lot shorter. But I loved it, like kind of the boy cut. Once again, on the more tousled side, it was great. It was just a bit limited because other than like straightening my hair and curling my hair and slicking my hair back, those were kind of my only three options. And also I have really thick hair, so it was like, and it grows really fast, so I was having to cut it all the time. So this is, having it longer is definitely more low maintenance for me.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Okay. For mostly guys, actually, because this is something that I talk about with my friends at school. Buzz cuts.
Pass.
Yeah.
No, you look like you had lice and you cut your hair off. Like, please, no.
On top of that, bleached and buzz.
I haven't seen it a lot, but I would say pass, but I would say maybe more of a smash than just a plain buzz cut, because at least it seems like you tried to do something edgy and stylish.
Yeah. Yeah, most of the people I think who I've seen do it are swimmers. So when they get in the water, the chlorine gets in their hair and it turns green. And it's
Yeah. Yeah, that was me too. So I get that.
Last one, mullets.
Okay, so I hard smash. I can't, and I can't even, like, I'm not going to say that I'm proud of that, but I love them. They make me happy. And like, you know what, with how crazy the world is, like there's so much to not be happy about. So anything that strikes joy, you know, you should embrace. And I love a mullet. I'm not afraid to say, I also really love a mullet on a girl. So, which is maybe more controversial, but yeah, I don't like when they're too fluffy on the top, but like a curly mullet. Oh, beautiful. Pair it with a mustache. Like, I'm sold. I'll put my flannel on. We can go to the woods together. It'll be great.
Chop some wood.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to stop. Wait, actually, no, we're not going to stop the recording.
Thank you
so much for coming today. I had a great time talking with you.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun getting to chat and hang out.
Yay. Okay.